Anyone who strays too close to the heart of the zombie takeout jungle never returns. What's up? Welcome to episode 291 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listener submitted. This is from Roberto Suarez on Facebook in reference to our Ghostbusters mini-review, as I was calling it. He said, "A correction on your comments regarding the cartoon called The Real Ghostbusters. It wasn't called this because of Ghostbusters 2. Filmation held the rights to an unrelated TV show called The Ghostbusters. It had been a live-action show in the 70s, which was resurrected as a cartoon around the time the movie came out. The first Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah.
When a cartoon based on the Ghostbusters, the movie we all know, was released, they had to change the title to differentiate it from the Filmation production. Another useless slice of geek trivia occupying space in my brain."
I'm sorry for you, Roberto.
That's actually kind of interesting.
It is.
I would like to find out more about the other Ghostbusters.
The problem with that is nobody knows about the other Ghostbusters except for Roberto, of course.
Hmm.
And then the Ghostbusters that were the real Ghostbusters in the cartoon were nothing like the ones from the movie.
Right, right.
So
Slimer was their pet, if I recall correctly.
Right. To me, it sounds like they were the real Ghostbusters, not the movie Ghostbusters.
Most people are interpreting it like you are, but in reality, it was because of a legal issue.
Because they didn't want to do a cartoon version of Bill Murray, and
which, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, he wasn't exactly kid-friendly in that movie. At least not the first one.
No.
And one more bit of listener submitted. This is from John Phillips in reference to our Sharknado 4 review. Or I should say Sharknado the Fourth Awakens, just to be correct.
Sure.
He said, "Ted McGinley, I think, was on Happy Days after Ron Howard left. Show didn't last long after that." And in reference to John's comment, I looked it up and the character I was thinking of was just Chuck. It wasn't Cousin Chuck. I kind of combined him and Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch. He was... the Cunningham's other son, who was on for like the first season or two and then just mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of the opposite of what they did with Gemini. She was randomly brought in to replace Nova for a movie.
Just one of those things where the kid went to their room and never came back.
Kind of. Except he was like in his mid to late 20s. He wasn't a kid.
I love when Married with Children had the little kid on it, and then he just disappeared because they didn't feel like writing anymore for the little kid.
Was that a reference to Family Matters or not? Because that's the famous cases. I think, was it Family Matters or no, that was way before then, because Family Matters was the 90s. There were two cases, that and Boy Meets World. Both had a character who went up to their room and never came back. Or I think one of them, I think on Boy Meets World, she went up to her room and then was replaced by a different actress.
Well, they had the episodes with this kid they had written, and they decided not to have write anywhere. I think Katie Sagal may have like had a miscarriage or something.
Now that you mentioned that, I think I've heard about this. Yeah,
and so they just—I mean—they had all of these episodes written. They did them, and then once they were done with that season, they said, "Let's just not bring them back."
Wait, because she would have been uncomfortable with it. Yeah.
And they made no references to why he was no longer there, but there were scenes where they were sitting around the table, and on the back of the milk carton,
yeah, of course,
was a picture of the kid.
I think I remember this now that you're mentioning it. Incidentally, a side note about Family Matters: the kid who went up to their room and never returned eventually got into porn. The actress,
okay.
She got into porn.
That must have been a great episode. What's going on up there?
All right, so on to some news. Well, a couple of things to talk about. This first one might not be too much to get into. It's just some new information about the next Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery. It was announced today that it will be taking place 10 years before the original series. So presumably in the original universe. You know, if they're saying it's this long before the original.
I do like how they're mirroring the space shuttle program after the space shuttle program mirrored them back and had one called Enterprise.
Yeah. Also, there will be a female captain. Brian Fuller said it would be the most diverse cast they've had so far. So, female captain. There will be a gay character. And there will be more aliens on the crew than in the past. And we were talking about this before the show, and you mentioned DS9.
Well, right. I mean, there were a bunch of aliens in Deep Space Nine.
Well, there were. And I guess you could consider them on the crew. Like, Odo worked there.
Yeah, Odo was pretty much security. Yeah, he's the constable of the station.
Quark had a bar there, so I guess technically he's kind of crew.
Yeah, but I mean, he was a regular. He was there almost every
He was a series regular, right.
Yeah.
And you had Dax and Kira, who were
my favorite,
actually
of course,
Starfleet.
The Cardassian Taylor.
Mm-hmm. That's, again, a show I need to get back into. I was actually thinking about that compared to Babylon 5 earlier today, because I loved Babylon 5 once I got through the first season.
I should sit down with that when I have time to watch.
Have you not seen Babylon 5?
I don't think I've made it all the way through, no.
The first season is a slog.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I tried the first.
It took me a few tries.
Kind of like, I think I've had enough.
Push through the first season. It gets really good.
Okay.
Once they kill off the captain and replace him with Bruce Boxleitner, it gets good. And that is a sentence I never thought I would say.
I thought it went without saying.
But yeah, once Bruce Boxleitner comes in the second season, it gets really good. But the first season is a slog. Point is, I've loved Babylon 5. I really need to get into DS9. I mean, they're very different shows, even though the premises are almost identical. You know, Babylon 5 was more philosophical. DS9 was more of a Western.
Yes. Which is how Star Trek was in the first place. It was
Wagon Train to the Stars.
The Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yeah. Right. And incidentally, I also did a bit of checking to see if one ripped off the other. Babylon 5 was a year after DS9, so it couldn't have influenced it.
Yeah. They were getting ready for Deep Space Nine way earlier in Next Generation. Like, Ensign Ro was supposed to be Kira's role. Yeah. So they were setting up for a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
They were thinking spinoff way pretty early on.
And another bit of news. There has been a cast photo released for the Are You Being Served reboot. And it's interesting.
Now, I saw this picture already on my phone earlier.
Okay.
And just thought it was...
The original cast.
Because it's, you know, my phone. It's small.
Aside from the two or three new characters, they have matched the original cast almost completely in terms of the appearance of the characters.
And they're apparently setting it in the 70s too, right?
Yeah, they're basically just doing like Star Trek Continues with it. They're taking the original show and just continuing it on. Or at least for the movie. I think it's going to be a movie, not a series. Okay, I'm glad they're keeping Mrs. Slocum's insanely colored wigs, because that's a great gag. Beyond that, we know they're different actors.
Yeah, this just
They could
doesn't...
just, you know, look different. Maybe same hair color, same general, you know, type. But Mr. Humphreys doesn't have to look like Mr. Humphreys.
Right.
You know, a blonde guy in his mid-30s with an English accent is enough.
Right.
It's becoming more and more obvious that it's just a nostalgia play, which makes me really concerned for the quality of it.
Yeah, it's probably something I won't watch.
I'll check it out just, you know, because I love the original and I kind of need to see it, but I'm not expecting much at this point.
Now, I mean, this brings back to the Ghostbusters reboot, how so many people are angry at reboots where they're taking different genders and mixing things up. That's so much preferable to this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, would people really have been happy if we had somebody doing like a Bill Murray impression, a Dan Aykroyd impression?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, just impersonators come up and try to like take the characters to a third go at it, or just remake the first one with better CGI than what they had originally. Yeah.
And you mentioned that, and it kind of brings to mind a bit of a concern that I hadn't thought about. Did you ever see the American version of Coupling?
Yes.
For the first 5 or 6 episodes,
I don't think it made it past.
Well, no, it didn't. I think there were some that weren't aired.
Yeah.
They did like half a season. But like for the first 5 episodes, they were just remaking the same episodes as the original.
Right. Right. It was painful. It was terrible.
Not just the same concept, not just the same characters, the exact same lines practically.
Oh, yeah. And it just didn't work.
And that concerns me now that I thought about it with Are You Being Served? Because it's not just going to be the same characters and settings. It's going to be the same humor. It's going to be the same jokes.
You nailed it. That is. I was trying to put my finger on what this was like, putting, you know, a different person in trying to be the same character. And yeah, that U.S. version of Are You Being Served? Coupling, you're right. Coupling, and NBC spent a ridiculous amount of money for the rights of it. Then, of course, they advertised it for like a year in advance that it was coming out. Pretty close to a year. And then I think I don't think they had the Super Bowl that year to debut it under them. Or maybe they did. They may have premiered it after a Super Bowl.
Oh, wow, that's sad.
So, like, they put everything into it, and no one watched.
No. Nor like, should they have.
They canceled that thing. Yeah, they had episodes in the can that they never aired.
Yeah,
if you look,
there's like 5 to 7 episodes of it shot and filmed and out there available, probably on YouTube. It's probably where I watched it. But yeah, they were atrocious. And then they got The Office and did it right. New characters, same premise.
Well, right. When I heard they got The Office, I was kind of like, oh, really? They're going to do that again?
Yeah.
Why would they do that again? Because it was really... Mm-hmm. I swear they only made it like... I only made it into 2 episodes.
See, I didn't watch it at all when it first aired because I didn't know about Coupling at the time. I think this was before I got into Coupling.
Oh, I was familiar with all the episodes that they had done, and I forget which ones they were doing, but I'm like, okay, maybe that was just the first episode, maybe the second episode they'll start brand. No, they're just doing another Coupling episode, and it was just, oh my god,
so
I can't take this anymore.
So later, after I became an immense fan of Coupling, I hunted them down on YouTube, and yeah, it's only like the first 4 or 5 episodes. They did a few that were new stories, so they did break from that. And I think those episodes were better, so to speak. But yeah, of course, they didn't get a chance to air them.
Well, NBC has always had the reputation of not letting shows grow.
Yeah.
Which is really weird, because if they had always had this philosophy, Seinfeld, Cheers would have been canceled.
Oh, yeah.
Within the first, you know, season or two.
Wasn't Seinfeld canceled at first? Wasn't it brought back? I seem to remember that.
I don't think so. You know, it had some mediocre ratings when it first came out.
Because that first pilot season was vastly different from the show we know.
It was still great, though. I mean, I was stealing jokes from that left and right. I loved it when no one was watching it. Because it was like, look what I just did. Here's my Pez dispenser and stuff. And it wasn't until, like, it got reran that everybody knew where, you know, the Pez reference came from.
So just to put a capper on that, I'm not sure if it's on Netflix anymore, but if you can see Coupling, the original BBC version, watch it.
Of course. I don't understand why NBC just didn't rerun
the original episodes. Well, they probably couldn't get the rights for that. But.
Well, I mean, if you get the amount they paid for the rights to Coupling...
If it was that easy for...
They should have had the money to have just ran the damn episodes on TV.
If it was that easy for an American network to do that, Doctor Who would be on a major network instead of BBCA.
I just think they're afraid. I think they believe... For some reason, British accents only work on announcers, they think.
Yeah, good point.
They believe for some reason if you put it in dialogue, that for some reason Americans are too stupid to understand what they're saying. Yet everybody watches these shows on either, you know, PBS, BBC America, or wherever you can find it.
And since I can't pass up that segue, Speaking of too stupid, on to this week's movie, which is from 1989, Cannibal Woman in the Avocado Jungle of Death. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by avocados, the culinary chameleon that's pasty, virtually flavorless, and generally unappealing. It's the tofu of fruits.
And also brought to you by Apocalypse Now, helping mediocre filmmakers bolster their resumes since 1979.
Mediocre is generous.
So, yeah, I kind of tilted my hand a little bit here. all right, so we're in the jungle. We believe it's the Amazon at first. It looks like the Amazon. They're definitely Amazonian women there.
Unfortunately, they're not on the moon this time.
Yeah. It's sort of that whole, I believe it's the mythological story of Daphne bathing.
Yeah.
And the hunter, of course, catches her bathing. It's a very classical story. A few cultures have similar stories of the hunter catching the woman bathing in the water. And then, of course, she winds up killing him in some way or another. And then takes his buddy out. This scene, of course, I'm describing is completely tacked onto the film because none of the major stars are in it. It's the only TNA scene, real TNA scene in the movie.
And is it referenced later in the movie at all?
No.
Didn't think so.
It's just that they're these women, they're Amazonians, they they kill people.
And it's the only nudity. Now, you're right, it is.
And there's avocados in this jungle. Okay, so now the actual movie begins. It's there's a university professor of feminist studies, and she's, of course, called upon a mission, which I don't understand why she wasn't Margot Willard. Yeah. But anyway, she's playing the part of Willard in this Apocalypse Now thing that, you know, in case you didn't get that, you know, she's hunting Dr. Kurtz in the jungle. And playing the part of Dennis Hopper here is, I really think it's Karen or Bunny is our Dennis Hopper because, you know, kind of.
She goes native.
Yeah, she goes native. They have to hire a guide, though, to get into the jungle to get these women. Because you see, it's the CIA wants to lure these women who have holed themselves up in the jungle that is not actually in California, not the Amazon. And so they have to hire a guide. They happen to find some stereotypes. And then when they, of course, they all back away when they find out where they're going. Instead, they get the bumbling Indiana Jones spoof in the form of Bill Maher. And he leads them right to them. There's some other natives in this jungle. It's very crowded for just being in California.
Yeah.
And
you know there's jungle in California.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that desert there?
Pretty much.
Actually, it's pretty much, you know.
It's pretty much Death the entire Valley. State is either desert, suburbs, or city.
Well, the part of that map, isn't that pretty much Death Valley? Yeah, yeah. They're in between California and Nevada.
Right.
Anyway.
That was supposed to be a joke on their part, but it really didn't play just like every other joke in the movie.
Well, right. they meet all these other tribes there that are varying degrees of masculinity, femininity, and whatever gender politics that they had that at this point are like 7 years old by the time this movie came out. I was like, what year is this again?
Yeah, it did feel very early 80s.
Yes, it did. It did. And then hilarity ensued because they get captured after escape.
Yeah, down to that long, boring title sequence, which was weird for 89.
Oh, yeah. That scene was just so isolated in the beginning. It was kind of like...
Well, there was that isolated scene and then this long... Well, just before it, I think. I don't think it was pre-credits because that came along later. Just before it, there was this long, boring shot of the desert or of the jungle with this music that was that served as the title sequence. And nobody was really doing that by the late 80s.
Well, I kept wondering when this movie was really done, you know? The copyright had it at 88.
Okay, that makes sense. So probably when it was shot.
Yeah, they have a release of 89. And there are some jokes about Tiffany and Fawn Hall thrown in, which, God, kids, you don't bother Googling kids. You don't even need to know who the fuck any of those people are.
Well, Tiffany you might know because she was in a movie we reviewed a couple years ago. But...
Well, yeah, but you still really don't need to know. Yeah,
Fawn Hall now. There's also a reference to Ferraro debating Bush. She was running for vice president. Why would she have debated Bush?
Because that was when Bush was vice president. See,
that's how old the
references were.
I was thinking it was when Bush was running for president.
No, they're talking about the 84 election.
Oh, that's right. Mondale was 84. He wasn't
right.
88.
They bring up Mondale several times in this, which is really weird.
I thought it was 88 he ran. You're right.
You would think so because it's his movie from 89.
Yeah.
But no, they're referencing shit that happened
in 84,
5 years earlier.
Yeah.
In fact, Equal Rights Amendment, I had to look up. Mm. That thing, first of all, I didn't know they were like only three states shy of getting it passed. But the Equal Rights Amendment died in 82.
You actually did research for this piece of shit?
Well, they kept bringing things up. So I was like, wait a minute. It was kind of confusing. Like, when did they make this?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in all fairness, the Equal Rights Amendment was a pretty damn stinging loss to the feminist movement. And it was even talked about in the late 80s, I remember, and early 90s. So it did have a resounding effect, and I can understand that. But who didn't see Mondale losing to Reagan in that election? Dude, I was 11 years old and was kind of like that's going to happen kind of thing.
Now, this was the first feature directed under the pseudonym of J.D. Athens by screenwriter J.F. Lawton, who also authored Pretty Woman, Under Siege, and its sequel, and the television show VIP.
Well, the crazy thing is, Pretty Woman is the film he does after this.
And the only one that anyone likes. Are you familiar with VIP?
Yeah.
The detective show starring Pamela Anderson?
Yeah. I think I've seen some. I mean, it was on a long time ago.
Yeah. So that's this guy's pedigree. Under Siege and VIP and Pretty Woman, which was a weird success, I guess, considering his other work.
I'd just seen something on that not long ago, how much that movie was changed because they were supposed to just be these shallow, horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gary Marshall took a hold of it.
Okay.
Made it the cutesy comedy that we all know.
So it was Marshall's responsibility for making it succeed.
Right. It was.
He made it a success.
Originally called like whatever the sum of money was, he was going to pay her in the end.
Oh, wow.
And it was, it was just all about how shallow they both were.
Oy. So it really does fit this guy's filmography, so to speak.
Rest in peace, Gary Marshall, by the way.
I looked through. It really is nothing he's done that we could review.
No, God, no.
I was thinking about a tribute, but there's nothing in our wheelhouse.
And in fact, like the last, decade or so of his career was just movies like Mother's Day and stuff that made some serious cash, but just, people getting dragged to go see.
Right.
Half the audience at least getting dragged to go see it.
Now back to Cannibal Women.
Yes.
I have seen student films with better pacing. I mean, it puts student actors in this and it would be a student film. That's the one plus I can give it. Well, one of two is that the cast was decent. And by decent, I'm talking about Shannon Tweed, Bill Maher, and Karen Mistall.
I think they could have, I don't know. with this cast, you kind of expect more.
So, I think the material actually made them look better than they were. Because Shannon Tweed is, you know, passable. Same thing with Karen Mistall. And I don't know that I've seen Bill Maher act outside of this. I mostly know him as a comedian. Well, yeah, it's been ages since I saw that.
Yeah, I watch, you know, his real time for a while now. And I just wish he didn't do bits.
Yeah.
The bits are just so painful some weeks. I mean, some weeks he brings up some good singers, but mostly it's just like, oh my God, that joke is so tired, man.
Well, he found his niche as a host, you know, and he needs to stay in that niche. He's very good at it.
Yeah, he's quite good. I mean, he's not afraid to have people of differing viewpoints of his own, or, I mean, of his audience.
And same thing as Politically Incorrect, which I'm much more familiar with in real time, personally. I kind of lost interest in him by the time he got to HBO.
Well, yeah, I didn't have HBO for so many years, so I didn't.
Well, I think that's also part of the reason I never got into real time, but I was a big fan of Politically Incorrect. But point is, he really shouldn't act.
Yeah.
And he hasn't, to his credit, done it since this, as far as I know.
Yeah, I saw mostly he plays himself in different things. But I think there's like a few like cameos he's done.
Mm-hmm. And the other positive, since we're talking about Maher's character, I did enjoy seeing the anti-feminist as the butt of the joke. He was the buffoon throughout the movie. He was the one who got abused.
But of course, the problem was you didn't believe that he was really an anti-feminist.
Well, because we know Maher's positions on a lot of those issues.
Not just that, though. But
I don't know. If we had seen this in 89 and had no idea who he was, maybe we would have bought it.
It goes back to Maher's acting ability.
Well, that too, yeah.
You know? I mean, maybe it's because I've seen him do the bits on his show, and they kind of go a lot like this movie. This movie was kind of like taking an hour and a half of his bits together and just kind of like, ah.
Now I know I definitely don't want to see his bits then.
But I mean, the discussions on his show are worth tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen many clips of those, and that's always a good part.
He's a little insane, if you think about it, because he's doing this show live where he starts out with like the monologue, and you know, he'll catch a few here and there. Yeah. He's got like a decent batting average there, I guess. Mm. Then he'll do a one-on-one interview for like 10 minutes with somebody, like usually a pretty big newsmaker. He's, you know, done like all the candidates. And then he runs to do like a panel discussion after that for like 15 minutes. He'll do some bit, bring out another guest to add to the panel, and then continue the discussion for a while longer. And then close with another bit.
Yeah. Usually a new rules kind of thing.
Yes, new rules. So, I mean, it is 55 minutes of him, just at least 55 minutes of him running from one end to the other, pretty much. It's kind of like John Oliver's show, only double in length.
Right.
And there's no, like, little break of a video clip.
Right, yeah. I think I can put the fault in this movie squarely in the director's hand. Because there's a joke early on that should have killed me, but it didn't. Because there's a lot of Zucker Abrams-style humor in this movie.
Yeah.
And the first example that should have had me on the ground, but I just shook my head. The dean at the college where, I think it's Dr. Hunt, Shannon Tweed's character, is teaching when she gets brought in, you know, to go on this exposition to the it was filmed at the Avocado Groves maintained by the University of California at Riverside. I know someone who went there, which the university uses for horticultural experiments. That was the building you saw there. But in the scene where they send her off on this mission, the dean is in attendance. And the dean is named Dean Stockwell. I should have loved that joke.
I kind of missed that joke, I think.
It was very quick. They mentioned his name, and I happened to catch it, Dean Stockwell. And I just shook my head.
I thought you were going to talk about San Bernardino standing in for Mos Eisley.
Yeah, again, I should have loved that joke. Or the scene where she's getting the teaching supplies. And she's asking, you know, for all these actual teaching supplies. And then she says a Bowie knife and a gun, and they start talking about ammunition.
You expect the secretary to stop and be like, whoa, what do you think of it? Yeah. And instead, of course, the secretary is just whipping all of these things out.
It's a gag straight out of Airplane.
It is. I'll take the bomb on the left.
Yeah, exactly. And I should have loved it, but it just doesn't play. And it's got to be the director's fault. It's not the cast. The cast was solid.
You may be right. If that had landed, I think that it would have set the movie up a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly the teaching supplies gag. That should have had me on the ground.
You're right.
It's on classic paper, Abrams.
On paper, both of those are... All three of those are very funny bits.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. They really... I think the Mos Eisley thing kind of landed.
It landed a little bit, but it was more of a groaner than a laugh.
For really?
Me. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking, even in 89, there were not many Star Wars parodies.
That's true.
I mean, other than like the skin deep lightsaber thing, mm-hmm. which, why did it take Kevin Smith to really bring it out is really the big question.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Ninja Rambo wrestler gag. Way too on the nose.
Oh, of course.
They get to what is effectively the San Bernardino Cantina.
Yeah.
And
to hire a bounty. Not a bounty hunter. A guide. A guide, yeah.
And you see a guy dressed as Rambo doing the whole spiel about, you know, how he was a Nam vet and, you know, he just loves to kill people. And
which
then,
is why I like the San Bernardino bit, because they are looking for Han Solo.
Yeah, basically.
It actually worked. It wasn't a Family Guy. We're
right, yeah.
Slipping this reference in. Mm-hmm. It actually made sense in the context.
And then they go to a ninja and then a professional wrestler. And that gag worked in context as a parody, but it was just too on the nose.
Oh, yeah, entirely. All four of them, Mar included, were just on the nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Mar was basically Indiana Jones.
Of course, the problem with that is, you know, we've had, like, Kurt Russell, you know, do it, you know, before this. And
yeah, exactly.
So it was long played out. Think about it. Indiana Jones was 7 years before this came out.
Oh, God. That, again, speaks to how much earlier it must have been written.
Yeah.
Because there's a Donahue reference. There's a tribe of men who are subservient to the Piranha Women, and they're called the Donahues. A cringeworthy joke. But also, wasn't Donahue retired by 89?
No, I think he was still going.
Was he still going? I thought he'd retired years before then.
I think he was still going for a couple more years at least.
All right. Also, one thing I kind of noticed when Hunt, Tweed's character, had some longer monologues. Didn't she sound kind of like Leslie Nielsen without the punchlines?
Yeah. She would have made a great Leslie Nielsen, really.
Yeah. But it was a whole, like, Leslie Nielsen gag without the punchline at the end. It was weird.
Yeah. They didn't have what they call jokes
mm-hmm.
written into anything that she was saying.
No.
I mean, no, you know, Shirley, you know, you must be joking.
But, yeah, call me Shirley, right. Also, a Bugs Bunny reference was used, and that didn't even get a chuckle out of me.
I missed the Bugs Bunny reference.
When he was in the marinade, that was a whole Bugs Bunny riff.
Oh, yeah.
They've used that exact joke on Looney Tunes.
You're right. The whole, in the back, please, in the back.
Yeah. I should have gotten a kick out of that, but it just fell completely flat.
Mara's Bugs Bunny works.
Yeah. But he did a good impression. I'll give him that. Also, the second tribe didn't get introduced until the last 20 minutes. There's this other tribe, the Barracuda Women, who have this philosophical difference with the Piranha Women and as such have been at war with them. Again, a good gag. It just doesn't work.
You could see it coming from a mile away.
Yeah. And just, you don't introduce that in the last 20 minutes. That should have been like the last half of the movie.
Yeah.
And couldn't they have at least made some attempt at fight choreography? Hunt and Kurtz duel at the end of the movie, because of course they do.
Yeah.
And it is just Adrian Barbeau and Shannon Tweed with no training, just standing there holding swords and banging them against each other. I think Mar's right to be as embarrassed by this movie as he is. You know, we gave Jay Leno a bit of a pass because we kind of enjoyed Collision Course, but you know, Marl was absolutely right about this one.
Collision Course had some, you know, production to it. Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I did get a kick out of the buildings in the jungle.
Well, yeah, I think I knew that it was said that it was filmed at UCR, so I kind of saw that joke coming.
Yeah, I got a kick out of the Donahue's pretty much being like a backyard, you know, barbecue set kind of thing in the middle of the jungle, and
yeah.
the temple or whatever was just, you know, how the hell did this get here kind of thing.
Right. Again, on paper it works for me. In execution, it didn't.
It was probably my favorite bit in the whole movie, actually.
The Donahue's?
The building.
The building, oh yeah.
The Donahue's thing was pretty weak.
Well, the whole the name Donahue's was cringeworthy as hell. In hindsight, the backyard barbecue thing was kind of funny, again, on paper. Oh, one nicely obscure reference. The name of the character Ford Maddox, who was one of the men who recruits Margot Hunt, to enter the jungle, refers to author Ford Maddox Ford, who collaborated on 3 novels with Joseph Conrad, though not Heart of Darkness.
Huh.
So it was someone he wrote with, other books with, that they referenced in this. That was a nicely obscure reference.
And of course, that guy that played him, Barry Primus, who was like gone on to direct American Hustle, and
oh wow, okay,
he's had probably second to Marr, maybe even better than Marr's career. Who knows?
In both cases, they realized acting wasn't for them, and they moved on to other things that they were good at.
I don't know what he's done as an actor.
Well, but obviously, if he's done American Hustle, he's a much better director.
Yeah,
you know, and Marr, as we've said, decent comedian, great host, not meant to be an actor.
His acting credits are ridiculous, Barry Primus.
Okay.
He'd been acting way before this, like into the 60s.
Which one was he? The one with the curly hair, the civilian, or the military guy?
Francis Ford, whatever. Maddox.
Yeah, I don't know which of the two guys it was, though.
There were too many useless bits in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I've gotten my positive out of the way.
Okay.
The hippo, the tiger, I mean, things that just had nothing to do. And of course, I guess the joke with the hippo was they weren't showing the hippo. You knew there wasn't a hippo actually right there.
Yeah.
And they had no money for that sort of thing. So, but, you know, also, on the other hand, it was just all time filler. Just like the whole, oh, the dumb woman is petting the tiger. I mean, it just didn't.
People often criticize the Sharknado series because they're in on the joke and, you know, they're deliberately making a bad movie. Jokes like the hippo thing kind of give me a sense of what those people mean, because I see that in this movie.
Yeah.
It's too self-referential. It's too in on the joke.
Yeah.
It works in Sharknado for me for the most part. I mean, the last one fell down a little bit. But it really doesn't work in this movie. And it's got to be Lawton's fault, the director. I can't think of who else to blame.
Well, because the joke winds up really just being they're staring around and yelling at this thing
right
off camera. And, you know, they shoot it. But there's really no point to it because, you know, it's not going to get them.
Right, exactly.
Whereas the point to Sharknado is there's nobody safe. Well, before this movie, there was nobody safe.
Right. Unless you were a shepherd.
Yeah. Now
and even Gil wasn't really safe because he was left in space at the end of 3.
Yeah.
On the sequels and remakes?
On the sequels and remakes.
My knee jerk is to say no because it's horrible. But I think with a good director, I think the idea could work now because feminism has become such a controversial issue again.
Isn't that strange that it seems to be even more of a touch point now than it was 30 years later?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, in the 70s when it was new, it was a touch point. The 80s, it was just kind of like dismissed.
Well, the 80s were kind of the aftermath.
Yeah. it was just kind of like, oh, whatever, you guys, you know, mm-hmm. I mean. But now, it is such a touch point. It's just such a lightning rod.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people that are just, there's no middle ground, it almost feels like, you know? Yeah.
And I just thought of the right director.
Who?
Paul Feig.
Hmm.
He could do the comedy. You know, he could play this kind of comedy and make it work. And all the anti-feminists hate him because of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
He is really the right guy for the job. Because ultimately, I mean, it's a little confusing, but I think this is a pro-feminist movie.
Well, right. That's the other thing. This had, this, you know, the dialogue was pro-feminist.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual movie itself, the
But they open it with one of the most exploitive shots I've seen in a movie.
Like, the actual, you know, visual part of the film
mm-hmm.
seemed to play against it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the weirdest parts of it, is I don't even know what they were trying to say. Because it's kind of doubly heavy-handed.
They were trying to not pick a side, it almost felt like.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
But putting Mar in there as the voice of, you know, masculinity.
Chauvinism.
Or chauvinism just doesn't work.
No,
You needed more of a brute, you know, in there.
Mm-hmm.
But Mar putting on the act of the brute.
Right. On to brains.
On to brains.
Cast was decent. I liked seeing the anti-feminist as the butt of the joke, but that's about it. I'm going one.
I think this had... It had something deep down that could have been worked out of this, but yeah, it just didn't have... The jokes just didn't land.
Mm-hmm.
If they knew what they were doing with the avocado being a metaphor for, like, another certain precious resource,
mm-hmm.
I would have been amazed. But they yeah. really weren't talking about that.
No.
You know, nobody was. And the reference is just being so old. I'm going to.
All right. And what have we learned?
We learned that Letterman is the horror.
Nice.
Which was one of the other great jokes of the movie. Mm.
And I learned that when an actor is embarrassed by a movie, you should probably listen to them. All right, so next week when we'll be reviewing Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, this is the interesting one.
Oh, I've been waiting to do this one for a long time.
Because we knew TMP was going to be bad. And, you know, the rest have been pretty good. this is the really controversial one.
This separates the fans from from the casual goer.
And the last time I saw it, I was definitely on the casual side. And I've become more of a fan, so I'm really curious to see how I'm going to react to it. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. Of course, on zombietakeout.com, you'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through early 300s, and only a few more until we reveal episode 300.
Right.
First episode of September, I think, is 295. So
wow,
that's when we'll be revealing it. And we've got a couple of good ones up until then. Well, one good one and one promising one. Real Genius after Star Trek. Oh, two good ones. And one promising one, He Never Died with Rollins. I'm kind of hopeful about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. This never even... I think from the very first scene, I knew there was no way this was coming back.
Actually, when did I know this wasn't gonna... Yeah, you know, that first scene really does kill any hope for this. It's just so badly done. I thought we got a meter. It's really bad.
Or maybe the scene when they recruit Hunt. I think that's really officially when the nail was in the coffin for me.
Yeah, when they throw the jokes out and they just aren't landing.
Yeah, because if those jokes didn't work, nothing will.
Yeah.
Of course, you can email us on zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 401-436-8ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go eat yourself.
Or you can just watch this movie.
Oh.
401-436-8-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
The horror of that show.
So there will be a female captain. They say it'll be the most diverse. Brian Fuller said it would be the most diverse cast they've had so far. So.